The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. G'day and welcome to this Stockhead podcast. I'm your host, Peter Strachan. Today, we're delving into the world of graphite and specifically the processing of graphite for applications in anodes for high-tech rechargeable batteries. To assist us, we are pleased to welcome Surinder Garg, who is the Group Technical Services Manager at Heavy Minerals and Graphite Miner, Minerals Commodities Limited, whose code is MRC. Welcome, Surinder.
Thanks, Peter. Good to be here.
Now, MRC is a heavy minerals producer at its beach sand operation on the Atlantic coast of South Africa and also has a graphite mine operating in far north of Norway, where it has been working towards a possible downstream processing to add value by producing active anode materials. Firstly, Surinder, I am interested to learn how your career has brought you to work on projects in far north of Norway and on the South Africa's Atlantic coast.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting question. But, you know, it's not uncommon in mining, I suppose, where you travel around a fair bit. You know, I started out in mineral sands in Queensland when I finished my PhD and decided I wanted to be in operations rather than in research. And after many a year in mineral sands, I went to Ok Tedi in Papua New Guinea for quite a few years. And that actually led me to Nautilus Minerals in based out of Brisbane, who were looking at mining the seafloor of all places. So, you know, South Africa and mineral sands and Norway for graphite is just part of the parcel, really.
Very similar. And I worked in Zambia and I was also in Bougainville. So we've sort of been in similar parts of the world, Surinder.
Yeah, and the beautiful parts of the world too, you know, indeed. A few issues.
So Stockhead has recently spoken with MRC's business development officer, Peter Fox, about plans for expansion of its Tormon heavy minerals projects in South Africa. So in this podcast, I'd like to leave the titanium minerals and zircon to the side and dig deeper on the graphite front. So, Surinder, can you please tell the listener about the company's current operations in Skarland in Norway?
Sure. So we started doing a DD on a due diligence study on Skarland in 2018, and we felt that it was a more attractive option into entering the graphite mine than going straight to developing our Western Australian asset in graphite, which is Manglinup. Skarland's been operating since the 1930s, pretty much continuously, and they moved to a new deposit in late 2006. So it's got a long operating history. Our feeling was that, you know, with graphite, you're selling essentially a specialised commodity at sort of industrial prices. So Skarland, with its long history of sales into Europe, meant that we'd get greater insights into that market. And also the entry price we felt was presented a really good opportunity for us.
So the company now owns 100% of Skarland, of the graphite mine?
MRC owns 90% and the other 10% is owned by an unrelated party who basically brought the project to MRC in 2018.
Okay. So at the Skarland in Norway, the company has the operating Birken graphite project and has also defined, as you say, this graphite deposit at Munglin up in southwest of Western Australia. Has the Norwegian project remained operating and cash flow positive through the pandemic? And what are the plans to move downstream to capture additional value by producing an upgraded anode grade product?
Sure. So Skarland, you know, it's a pretty small operation. It produces at the moment about 10,000 tonnes per annum. And its parent was somewhat capital constrained. So, you know, we're in the process of optimising Skarland, is how I'd put it. So we're looking at an additional stage of flotation and cleaning to get the fines at Skyland up to a better grade, up to that 96 to 98% carbon that you need for to make into downstream value-added products. And that process, is we expect that to be completed in probably Q2 of next year. So we've done the lab work, we've done the pilot work, and it's just a matter of ordering the equipment now. So that positions Skyland to produce material that we can then value add, because at the moment, the fines, which are the below 150 microns, they're about an 87 to 89% carbon. And ideally, we'd want to get that to at least a 96, and that's the target in the near term. So that then allows us to basically work on the active anode material side. And we're doing the work at lab scale for the pre-feas, and we're heading into what, with CSIRO, they're calling a sort of micro and mini pilot scale work.
Yeah, so what's the aim of that work? That would, the graphite concentrate that you currently at the mine currently produces, that sold for US dollars, you know, 500 to 600, 650 per tonne, but you want to have a go downstream and get a value, a significant value, sort of 10-time value add for the product that you will produce.
That's right. So what Skylanders do is that, you know, in terms of making active anode materials, there's really two sort of key processes involved. One's micronizing and spheronization, where you're basically shaping the graphite from a flake to essentially a potato-shaped particles of small diameter, between 15 and 20 microns. And the second step is then to purify and coat that. The beauty of Skyland is that we can do that micronization and spheronization at essentially large-scale pilot with, you know, up to 25 kilo batches. And at that is sort of sizes, the equipment is, you know, they have the scale-up factors. Let me start that bit again. So we're aiming to basically, in micronization and spheronization, shape the particles to about 20 microns or 15 to 20 microns in diameter on average. And we do that with Skyland material, with the higher grade flake Skyland material, to basically make spherical graphite at scale so that they can provide us with the equipment costing for actual production scale. The purification side is a bit more complex because most purification of natural graphite is done using hydrofluoric acid, which is environmentally toxic and also comes with significant health and safety risks. So the two processes that we're looking at under our CRCP project, which is Australian government funded, in part, is they're both non-HF. So we're starting those at a smaller scale, lab scale essentially, and as we progress into the DFS next year, we'll take that into larger scale.
Okay, so what's your preliminary feasibility work uncovered about the potential for value adding at the project? I mean, you're going to go from producing a commodity, which is pretty much, you know, something that can be sold all over the world, to producing something which is a much more specific target market.
That's right. But you have to remember that with graphite, even though it is, you can sell it all over the world, you know, it's a very fragmented traditional market where you're selling, you know, a few hundred tons here, a few hundred tons there. And that market is essentially controlled by intermediary traders sitting between the producers and the end customers. And the traders do add some value through blending, for example, but they're also incentivized to essentially to keep that disconnect between suppliers and customers. When you go into making active anode materials, you're potentially selling to one or two gigafactories, so the cell producers. And that's a much more simpler model for selling graphite. And of course, as the PFS shows, that, you know, that there's a significant margin improvement as you go into those downstream products as well.
Yeah, so that's my next question, is really you'd have to establish relationships with one or two big customers who are going to take this, rather than sort of standing on a street corner with a bag of graphite and saying, who wants to buy that? You've got to really be talking directly to the cathode, you know, the battery makers, the cathode anode makers, or actually, as you say, the gigafactories.
Yeah, that's right. And so we're in the midst of those discussions at the moment, you know, and that's a process given, you know, with graphite for those sort of applications, given the safety risks associated with lithium-ion batteries, there's a qualification process that does take some time.
Yeah.
Whether that's a couple of years or more really depends on who you talk to. And, you know, there's also evolving technologies associated with that to reduce those safety risks as well. So we're in the midst of those discussions at the moment, and having Scarland in Europe means that, you know, it's easier to start having those discussions.
Yeah, I've been through this process with lithium carbonate and lithium hydroxide producers, where they produce a couple of hundred kilos, send it to a cathode maker, and 6 months later the cathode maker says, you know, send us another 200 kilos. And yeah, as you say, it can be a fairly drawn out process to get certification to sell your product.
That's right. And, you know, and it's not just the certification, which is obviously that's very important, but it's also how do you manage your working capital when you're going through that qualification process? You know, with Scarland, because it sells into traditional markets now, that's actually relatively straightforward, you know. Whereas if you're starting a new project, like, if, for example, if you start with manganate first, then you'd have to manage that production while you're waiting to qualify, you know, which is a tough going to do that.
Yeah. So that brings us to the actual capital cost of establishing, you know, a full-scale project. And, you know, how would this be structured, do you think, and financed? Would you be bringing in a downstream partner potentially?
Yeah, so that's open for discussion at the moment. So we're looking at a number of options. And being based in Scarland in Europe, and our intent on putting at least the first module, and probably modules 1, 2, 3 in Europe as well, there's a lot of, you know, focus in the European Union on establishing a, you know, battery material supply chain in Europe rather than being reliant on China. So Scarland gets our foot in through the door in those discussions with the European funding entities, and the PFS, and then going forward into the DFS helps sort of realise some of those options.
Well, certainly the pandemic would be playing in your favour, as people have realised the concerns about long chains of supply and relying on one particular supplier. And so the potential might be then to actually put this graphite project out and float it locally as a separately funded entity.
Yeah, we're looking at all of those options, whether we basically list as a separate entity or potentially list MRC there. So there's a range of options that are being looked at, and also obviously there's debt financing options as well. And it seems to be a bit more cost effective to do that in Europe than in Australia.
Yeah, it's about a $350 million spend to get the thing up and running.
Yeah, that's for the all three modules. So, you know, so the first module, which will just process Scarland material, that's roughly depending on whether it's a caustic process or the carbon chlorination, between 80 and just over 100 million.
Yeah, okay. And then you could potentially produce a concentrate from southwest of Western Australia, Munglanup, and transport that to the processing plant.
That's right, because Scarland on its own, it's like I said, it produces 10,000 tonnes per annum at the moment. It'll go up to 16. It's permitted to do 16. It's interesting, but it's not really large when you consider sort of, you know, they're talking about 300 gigawatt hours of battery capacity, but just in Europe. So, you know, that's hundreds of thousands of tonnes of graphite required for the anode for that.
Yeah. What are the major input costs into the process itself? Is that power? I mean, certainly Norway has cheap electricity.
Yeah. Again, depends a little bit on the purification process, but yeah, reagents and power and labour are surprisingly the three main ones. So, Norway obviously has a significant advantage in terms of electricity costs, but also importantly, in particularly in the European context, is the fact that most of that power all of it's essentially hydroelectric. And that's important because the Europeans are using sort of what they're calling a green passport to basically sort of counter cheap Chinese supply.
Yep. So, once you've got the provenance of your product It's not it's ethically supplied and so forth, and has low, carbon miles in terms of where it comes from to the battery makers.
That's right. So yeah, it has low carbon miles, less geopolitical risk as well, whether it's from Skynet itself or from Munglinup, and that helps as well. And and the other thing, permitting for new mines in Europe is difficult, to put it mildly. So having an operating mine that's fully permitted is a significant advantage as well.
Yeah, once you've already got the thing up and running, you've basically put the staff in the ground. So here we have a mine.
That's right. And it also means that when we're doing our downstream development, it lets us manage risk in one area at a time. So at the moment, we are optimizing Skyland to get the grade up. And by the time we start constructing and commissioning the downstream, we'll have completed the DFS. We'll also have completed, at this stage, what we're looking at is a 2 gigawatt hour supply of coated spherical graphite. So a small demonstration plant, essentially. So we're sort of de-risking each element as we go along, but constraining risks at the same time. When that first module is fully commissioned, then we look at Munglinup and expansion of our modules 2 and 3.
So what's the time frame? You've done the preliminary feasibility work and now you're working on a definitive feasibility study. What's the time frame for finishing that?
Okay, so the DFS at this stage looks like it will finish Q4 next year. And then we'll, at some point during that DFS, probably about halfway through, we'll look at the 2 gigawatt hour, basically produce about 2,000 tons or thereabouts per annum of graphite, of coated graphite, by sort of Q2, Q3, 2023. And the first module, sorry, 2022, and the first module will then be up and running mid-2023.
So that'll be in the form of a pilot plant, really, effectively, to start off with?
The demo plant, which will be running mid-2022, which will be essentially a single-line operation.
Okay.
Will be running mid-22, and the first full module, which will process up to 20,000 tons per annum, will be running mid-2023.
So what's the expected market value of the anode material that the plant will produce in the current market?
Based on the pricing data we got from Benchmark Minerals Intelligence, it ends up being a basket price of just under $6,000 a ton, and that compares with just over $1,000 a ton once we upgrade the quality of the current concentrate. So it's a significant increase in basket price, and of that, the coated spherical graphite is circa $10,000 a ton.
Oh, okay. So, and what would be your operating cost to get that to the customer's door?
It's about just for the purification for the downstream plant. It's about $1,600 a ton for the caustic process, and about $1,200 a ton for carbon chlorination. Yeah. To that, we add the sort of the $400 to $500 a ton for the concentrate production.
And you've already spoken about the development of the market in Europe. It's some hundreds of thousands of tons of this product that's going to be required.
That's right. So we don't see, the other players in that market, such as Talgate, we don't see each other as competitors, really. There's enough demand for them and us and others as well. So
yeah,
it's a great opportunity for all the players. But it does also show that, you really need to get to that stage for a viable, commercially viable graphite business, essentially. Just making concentrates, it's tough going.
Yeah, indeed. And there's not a shortage of graphite globally, but it's the downstream processing. And we have spoken to Talga and we know their story as well. So, yeah, I think there's room. And the market is developing as electric vehicles really start to hit the straps over the next 2 or 3 years. It's going to be really exponential growth in demand. Don't you agree?
I do. I mean, there's also competitive pressures from, obviously, you probably would have heard Elon Musk talking about silicon anodes at Tesla's battery day. The way we see that is that we is a more conventional low doses of silica in a graphite-based anode at the moment. Just there's less technology risk associated with that part.
Well, that's fantastic, Surinder. And thank you for coming in today to talk to us about the project in Norway. And we'll be watching very closely as the feasibility study develops through the rest of this year and into 2021. And we'd be delighted to get you back again, perhaps early next year. And I'm sure there'll be a lot more to report on as the project moves forward. So thanks for coming in today.
A pleasure, Peter. Anytime.